ויצאו את ארץ כנען אשר אני נשן לבני ישראל. אז איתה לבו? Send our men that they may search the land of Canaan, which I give unto the children of Israel. We all know Rashi's quotation from the Tanhuma pertaining to this passage. Lomo nitzlecho parsha parsha Miriam. That's what the Tanhuma asked. If you shall look so alitzki dibro, she dibro beyochiyo, v'shoyim alolu rolu v'leilok humusa. Why is this section dealing with the Meraglim put in juxtaposition with the section dealing with Miriam's punishment? Because the previous part, the last parsha in Vayeshlach, tells us about the Miriam episode. To show the grievousness of the spy's sin, Miriam was punished on account of the slander of Lashon Hara, which he uttered against her brother. And these sinners meaning the Meraglim, witnessed it, and yet they did not take a lesson from her. In order to understand, it is a simple Tanhume and it's also a complex Tanhume. At surface, prima facie, Tanhume is very simple. Probably Tanhume should be explored in depth. In order to understand the words of the Tanhume, it is indispensable to explore the Miriam incident in depth. What exactly happened with Miriam? Why was she punished? What actually did happen? What complicates the situation is a pasuk verse in Kisetze, in Deuteronomy. The biblical passage in Kisetze says, in this biblical passage, we are warned not to forget what happened to Miriam on their way from Egypt to Eretz Israel. Every Jew, or a Jew, who recites the six Schiras, there are six Schiras in Siddur Hanukkah, yes? Amalek and Shabbos, and Yetzias Mitzrayim, and Miriam, and Matan Torah, right? A Jew recites the six Schiras daily, is acquainted with the text. Schiras asher osu ad Hashem lekecho leMiriam baderech betzeischem Mitzrayim. Remember what God did unto Miriam when you were on the way from Mitzrayim to the promised land. Rashi in Kisetze interprets the verse, the Zohar, in terms of Lashon Hara. Remember and don't engage in slander or in gossip. A Jew must not speak slander against another Jew, the way Miriam did concerning Moshe. It is quite difficult to understand why the Torah has singled out Lashon Hara to warn us against it. In what respect, I'm asking a question. In what respect does Lashon Hara differ from other mitzvahs concerning human relations, mitzvahs shebein odom lachavere, such as the prohibition against perjury, stealing, taking revenge, shaming somebody? Why was it necessary to place special emphasis upon Lashon Hara? Chayres asher osu ad Hashem lekecho leMiriam baderech, so Rashi says, shalei tisaper Lashon Hara. Why did the Torah deem it necessary to include the incident of Miriam among the greatest events in Jewish history, such as the Sabbath, Zohar Shem Shabbos Lekatshe, the Exodus, Manzitzka Shem Tzitzra Mevatn Franklin Achayecho, or Revelation at Mount Sinai, Schair Al Tishkar Esadvorim Asher Ovanecho, which one must always remember, is an episode, prima facie, actually insignificant I mean, when you read about Miriam said, so we consider, well, it was an passing episode. But why should we remember that? Forever. The way a Jew was told to remember the Sabbath, to remember the Exodus, to remember the revelation at Mount Sinai. Apparently, at the Miriam episode is just an important event, as Mohammed Samolik, yeah, I forgot before Mohammed Samolik, as Mohammed Samolik, or Yitzias Mitzrayim, or Matan Terah, or creation of the world by the Almighty. The Terah, I mean, has told us to remember. The Sabbath, Mohammed Samolik, Matan Terah, Yitzias Mitzrayim, but has also told us to remember the incident of the Miriam episode. The answer to this problem, we have got to understand it. The answer to this problem lies somewhere else, I believe. In order to understand it, we have to analyze, actually, the Miriam episode and find out what did the error on the part of Aaron and Miriam consist. What did Miriam accuse Moshe of, actually? Is, and I wish to insert here a parenthetic remark. It's not in my manuscript, it's completely now extemporaneous. Pertaining, you know, or you all know, that the Rambam in his introduction to Zroim and his classification of Tirosh Baal Peh has a separate section, what he calls Pirushim Amkubolim Meshe Rabbeinu. Means interpretation of the Pentateuch, which were transmitted to us by Moshe. But the Rambam wants to say there that there is all that we must interpret the text the way the Masera, the Kabbalah has accepted, told us to. Usually we have quite unlimited freedom in interpreting psukim in the Torah. We may interpret kipshutei, we may interpret kemidroshei. There's so many ways in which we can interpret and understand and comprehend the Torah. However, certain parshas, with regard to certain parshas, we don't enjoy the freedom of interpretation as much as we do enjoy concerning other parshas. For instance, the Rambam gives an example. Ayin Tachasayin. Ayin Tachasayin, Chazal have interpreted Momen Tachasayin, compensation. Monetary compensation for an injury. Not injury for injury. What if someone, says, all right, this is the Aloche, this is Medroshe, but why shouldn't I, who teaches little children, Shivaktanero, in another school, translate the words literally, ayin tachasayin, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. I have no right. If I should do it, my interpretation will be heretic. Because I have no right to interpret in a manner which differs from the Kabbalah. Rambam quotes another parsha. Ukachtem lechem bayim rishim pri yitzodor ekates morim vanat yitzor yisrael venocha. So someone will interpret the pasuk. A priyitzoda means any beautiful fruit, any pleasant fruit, not this way. And now the nochal will say, anach itzoris, he will interpret in terms of another culture, not the mirtle. According to Rambam, he has no right, and if he should do so, he'll commit a basic error. It would be a heresy. The Rambam is the Katzeisa Shkato, the Rambam. Should cut off her hand. Chazal interpreted the Katzeisa Shkato, she should stay Beishes, because she shamed him. What if a teacher or a rabbi should translate the Katzeisa Shkato literally, without baiting? You cut off her hand, even a pekeras account on her. You have no right. With regard to Rushin and Kubol and Meshe, means that certain parts of the Torah We cannot interpret in Shivim Ponim or in so many ways. There is only one way of interpretation and translation, namely, the Derech HaKabbalah. So I once heard from my father, the Chen Uvrocho, in the name of Reb Chaim, at the Parshas Miriam, the Ram didn't mention it, Reb Chaim said, at the Parshas Miriam belongs into the category, to the category of the Rushim and Kabbalim and Meshur Aven. If one should interpret Parshas Miriam, Kiisho Kushis Loka, that he took, he married an Ethiopian woman, is a case of Meshur Aven over there. This parasha we don't enjoy any freedom. There is only one translation and one interpretation. If you accept it, it's all right. If not, you have no right to teach. So how did Chazal interpret Vatedaber Miriam ve'arem b'meishe? Ve'arem b'meishe aleidis isha akushis asher lokoch ki isha kushis lokoch. How do Chazal? That's a free. There's no whip shot. We have no right, I mean, to introduce any other, I mean, interpretation or new ideas. What's the kisha kushis lokach? Kushis means tzipora. It's his wife whom he married when he came to Yitro so many years ago. Why is she called kushit? What do you say? Shiyofo kikush means she was unique, singular. Because the word, the trouble is many modern commentators of the Bible, I mean, simply don't know the semantics of the Hebrew language. That's why they arrive quite often at radical conclusions. The word Kushi means Ethiopian, Kushi perhaps means black, Negro, but Kushi means also unique. Ale kivnei Kushim atemli means you are a unique people. So Kiisha Kushis Lokach has Rashi says she was beautiful. It means she was unique, singular, in her appearance, in her beauty, as well as in her virtues and character. Vatedaber Miriam ve'arein b'meishe aleidus isha akushis asher lokach. And how do Chazal say asher lokach? No, so what's wrong? Asher lokach v'girish. He divorced her. He separated from the woman. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them in Sinai, a male, then we find the Pasuk Reshanan, a male lohem, shuvalei olechem, v'ato peya meidemori. It means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moses, v'ato peya meidemori, stay with me, means you have to withdraw from family, wife, and children. You are dedicated wholly and completely to me. Other people can go back to their jobs, to their homes, and lead like ordinary human beings. But Meshi is different. Meshi was elevated at Matan Torah to transcendental heights. He could not return to an earthly life. An earthly life. He could not return. So, Al Dvaru Yisho, B'Meshi, Aleidei Yisho Akushis, the Kushite woman means the unique, beautiful woman. Asher lokach ve'girish. It means that he married and he should have continued the marriage. But however, he did not act like that. He withdrew from her, either separated or simply divorced her. They consider that the separation, Moses' separation from Zipporah, was unnecessary and unfair. If you remember the Rashi, the trouble is that you don't study the Rashi when it comes to a difficult parasha. Rashi says how it developed, because the women, the wives of Elder the Maidot say, I mean, Zipporah said about the wives of Elder the Maidot, now they'll be divorced. And so that's how Miriam overheard the conversation, and that's why she complained bitterly against her brother. What did Miriam and Aaron say? What did they say? How did they argue the case against Moses? How did they argue? They argued the case. So perhaps HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to divorce her? Perhaps it was done in accordance with the instructions from the Almighty. So they said, Vayemru, Arak Beneshe Diber Adeshem, Aragam Bono Diber. For has the Lord spoken with him only, alone? Has he not spoken to with us as well? And we were not told to separate from our spouses. So why did they do it? We are all prophets. Why is his conduct different from ours? This was the problem. What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell them? He told them something. Vayemer Shimon Advorai, Im Yi Anivyachem Adeshem, Bamarei Lavesvado, Bachalei Madaba Bey, Lekin Avdimeshe Bechol Besi Nemanu, Peel Pea Daba Bey, Umare Velei Bechides. Usmuna Sadesem Yavit. This is prima facie, has no relationship to the problem. They didn't deny that Moshe was the greatest. They did not say that Moshe was superior to them. They said that separation was unnecessary. So how did HaKadosh Baruch Hu meet this argument? In what consisted the error which Miriam and Aaron committed? In their failure to understand one thing. What? What didn't they understand? HaKadosh Baruch Hu corrected it. What didn't they understand? What did they fail to understand? Yes? Correct. Moshe was not only the greatest, not only was the most perfect, he was the kindest, the saintliest. Of course, he was. But he was something else. Namely, he was different. Completely different. Miriam and Aaron were not aware of the incongruity and the incommensurability of Moses' prophecy with the prophecies of other lineage. They knew that Moses was the greatest, the most outstanding, the teacher of all prophets. However, they did not grasp Moses' singularity, or I would say singleness, and otherness. Moses being completely different, totally at variance with other Nevi'im. Failing to see Moses' aloneness, as singleness, they argued, "Ayin be Moshe bilvad diber adeshem, ale gam bonu diber." Has not the Almighty spoken to us? And yet, he has never told us to separate or to withdraw from our spouses. Apparently, that the Almighty disapproves a life of abstention. So why did Moses separate? What did he fail to see? That whatever they do is not characteristic of Moses. And Moses enjoys a separate status. Not only as the greatest, as the teacher, as the most perfect, as the kindest, as the saintliest, more than that, a separate status, which is beyond and above comparison. A certain rule applicable to Miriam and to Aaron might be out of context vis-à-vis Moses. As a matter of fact, the Rambam, speaks about the Nevuah of other Nevi'im, and it also deals with the Nevuah of Moshe. And the Rambam said that Meshes Nevuah differed from the Nevuah of other prophets pertaining to four basic principles. However, he says, the prophecy of our teacher Moses is different. In what respect was the prophecy of Moses distinguished? Sincerely, from that of other prophets, and the Rambam enumerates four things, four characteristics. All the prophets received their inspired messages in a dream or in a vision, Moses while awake and standing, as it is said, when Moses went into the tent. All the prophets received their messages through the medium of an angel. Moses received his message not through an angel, as it is said, mouth to mouth, do I speak with him. The Lord spake unto Moses face to face. Furthermore, and the similitude of the Lord doth he behold. That is to say that it was no allegory that was revealed to Moses, but he realized the prophetic message clearly, without riddle, without parable. Then he has all the prophets were receiving the messages who were filled with fear and consternation and became physically weak. Not so our teacher Moses, of whom the scripture says, as a man speaketh unto a neighbor. Moses was vigorous enough to comprehend the words of prophecy while retaining his normal state. None of the prophets could prophesy at their pleasure. It was otherwise with Moses. He was invested with the prophetic spirit and was closed with the power of prophecy whenever he pleased. There was no need for him specially to concentrate his mind and prepare for the prophetic manifestations. In the Rambam, actually, based upon the psukim, the verses, in our section during this Miriam, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them, and also in other passages in the Bible, so the Rambam has enumerated four basic differences between Moses and other prophets. And of course, so Moses was different, totally different. It was beyond comparison. And it comes to expression in the four words, which four words HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Leikein Avdi Moshe. That's it. Leikein Avdi Moshe. It's not only that he's supreme, that he's greater than others. He's different. Leikein Avdi Moshe. There's no comparison. So hence, there's no comparison. So your experience is not characteristic of Moshe's experience. And the rule which is applicable to Moses might not be applicable to you. So how can you say, Arag de Moshe levade di, Arag Moshe diber Hashem, Arag Ambono diber? Diber! But it's a different diber, it's a different dialogue. Moshe received the word of God in a different manner than you did receive. In a word, the head consisted in overlooking the four words, like in affirmation. My servant Moses is different, totally different. He is the prophet sui generis, singular and unparalleled, unmatched. As a matter of fact, the uniqueness of Moses came to expression in what? This parsha came to expression in what? None. Came to expression in a separate article of faith, in a separate Iker among these 13 Ikrei Hadas. We say every day, Ani ma'amin shekol divrei nevi'im emes. And right away we add, Ani ma'amin shevuas meisher rabbeinu rov ha'shor v'moyis v'amitis. Why was it necessary to add? It called even the VMS. Certainly, Moses Nevu MS. But because we had something, the Shuhur Yorov, Lavim Aboy Akedmim, Aboy Macho. So he actually professed three things. The absolute truth of all prophecies, the absolute truth of Moses' prophecy, which is not included among Kol Divrei Nevi'im Emes, because he's different. It is totally unique, singular. Somebody said, called it the Nevi'im Emes, means all prophets. But Meshi is not included. Meshi did not belong to the Hevel Nevi'im, of which we speak when we pronounce the article of faith called the Nevi'im Emes. Meshi was a Novi per se. Moses was. And secondly, that Moses Nevi'im was different from all. He was the father of all Nevi'im. He was not only the greatest, but the only one. No one else was like him. And this is a yesod. This is fundamental in our emunah. The Rambam formulated, you know, the Yud Gimel Yichud. I mean, the Rambam, why did the Rambam do it? Because this is the parasha of Miriam. That's exactly why Miriam sinned and why she was punished. The emphasis should be placed upon what? Upon Miriam's unawareness of Moses' otherness. Who was Moshe? Miriam answered, my brother, the greatest. Aaron answered, my brother, the greatest. No, but it's not, this is not the correct answer. Correct answer, who was Moshe? The greatest, yes. The saintliest, yes. The most perfect, yes. The kindest, yes. Etc., etc. However, Moses was something else. What? Single. Single. Unique. There was no one like him. And there'll never be someone who'll be like him. He was inimitable, incomprehensible, and what? The loneliest person on earth, because he was different from everybody. Whoever is different is lonely. Meshi is alone. You ask me, who was Meshi? Of course the greatest prophet, but the only prophet sui generis. The way he was. Basically, at this juncture, we come across a new idea. Namely, what idea? A new idea, very important idea in Yahadus. It's basically the cornerstone of Yahadus. The idea of Bchira. Bchira. The latter plays a central role in Yahadus. We believe that we are an Am HaNivchor, whoever the nice prayer, the nice Yahadus. There cannot be any compromise with people who deny prayer. If we haven't been elected, so our worth as Jews is reduced to zero. Chire is, and no wonder that many counted Chire among the Kriyadas. We believe that we are Am HaNivchor, a chosen people. What is Chire? After the Harton and the Kolam, you have chosen us, or you have elected us, or you have elevated us. Fine, what is it? The semantics of Chire. What does it mean to be a chosen people? The Torah defined the concept of Bchire by equating it with what? With what? By equating it with what? Huh? Skula, correct. Correct. Im shomei atishmo bekeilim, ushmartem es brisim, ve'yisem li zgulo mikolo amin. What is zgulo? Zgulo is a difficult word. Philologically, I mean, semantically. Difficult word. What does zgulo mean? We have it in Gehelet, we have it in Hamlochim, Hamdines. Zgulo, the way I mean, Chazal interpret, Rishenim interpret, Zgulo means something special. I have, for instance, many possessions. I have many goods, many things. I have great wealth. However, a certain treasure among many treasures. I cherish the most. One of the things I treat with special tenderness and care. I am related to the thing in a peculiar way. The relationship between me and this gulo is singular. It cannot be determined in terms of grammatical comparison, since it is an intrinsic, there is an intrinsic qualitative difference in the relationship. Let me quote an example. I mean, I believe the example is a correct one. Jacob loved Rachel. He loved very much Joseph. He loved certainly Leah, even though the Torah speaks that Leah Leok is Nuri. It doesn't mean he hated her, Hasashor. I mean, she was not. Jacob's love for her was not the same as he had, as the love he felt for Rachel. But it was not a difference in degree. Had it been a difference in degree, the Torah would not have called Leah Snur. It was a difference in kind. It was a different love. Of course Jacob loved all his children, no doubt about it. We love our children, certainly Jacob loved his children. Reuben, Levi, Shimon, everybody. But he loved Yehuda, Joseph was this gula. Something special. There was a certain relationship between Joseph and Jacob that did not exist between Reuben and Jacob. There was a certain relationship, love, tenderness, I mean, whatever, respect, between Jacob and Rachel that did not exist between Leah and Jacob. That's why the Torah speaks that Torah Leah is snoring. She was hated. She did not share in the love. Not even the lesser degree. Which Jacob gave Leah and the other Shvatim Garenius, not because it was a question of intensity. The love for Joseph was a more intense love. More intense. No, it was not a question of intensity. It was a question of kind, of quality. It was a different love. Keise Yoav Aviyah Mikol Echov does not mean Yeisa Mikol Echov, as we are want to translate or to interpret. Keise Yoav Aviyah Mikol Echov means in a different manner than he loved his other sons. Different, in a unique, singular, it's impossible to describe, to portray. The zgulo cannot be broken down into its component parts and analyzed in order to be analyzed. The one who knew it and recognized it was who? Was Judah, Yehuda. And his confrontation with Joseph, and Yigashel of Yehuda, the latter said something, V'nafshei k'shuro b'nafshei, Benjamin or Joseph's name. What does it mean? The life of Jacob, who is tied up with the life of the lad, of Benjamin. In other words, the love had a personalistic quality. Namely, it resulted in a metaphysical union of souls. Benafshei k'shuro benafshei. We have to interpret words in Tanakh, I mean. Well, there was a metaphysical union of souls. It was an existential merger. It was not just psychological love. It was existential love. Somehow, there was oneness between Joseph and Jacob, or Benjamin and Jacob. Eile, as a matter of fact, the Midrash says, Eile told this Yaakov, Joseph ben Shmaes Rishono Erez Echov. So the Midrash says, Eile told this Yaakov, Joseph. It's one person. מאשיר ליעקב וליוסף. מלמד שכונן של יוסף דמו ליעקב. ובודית חזל, אתם, ובודית חזל אקספרס, by hyphenating Jacob and Joseph. The unity, the metaphysical, ontological unity of it. There were not two persons. There were one person. It's not psychological love. It's not just a sentiment. It's not just an emotion. It's more than that. It's awareness. The Jacob in Jacob had awareness. His eye awareness of Jacob included Joseph. However, his love for his other children did not precipitate metaphysical or ontological oneness. It was sentiment, deep-seated sentiment, very intense emotion, but Jacob and Reuben did not unite. Jacob united with Yosef or Binyamin. We understand now, that's exactly, and Miriam failed to understand the singularity of Moses. I'm resuming, speaking of the topic. Aaron and Miriam, at the very outset, did not realize the significance of the Zgula element in Moshe. They did not know that Moshe merits special attention and deserves to be treated separately. That's the reason for the Torah to warn against the sin of comparing Moses with the other prophets. We also understand now why the Torah, while reminding us of the Miriam episode, added the three prima facie unnecessary words, Baderech Betzifchem Mimitzrayim. Sleep. Why was it necessary to say? Why did they mention it? We all know the locus where this incident happened. We all know some Mechatzeres. Why did the Torah mention the locus? The Torah tried to impress upon us that the whole Exodus would not have occurred if Moses had not been the only one, the prophet and the leader beyond the reach of the imagination. If Moses had not been the different, totally other, the strangest of all, inimitable, and unmatched, Yetzias Mitzrayim would have not taken place. Why? No other Navi could have actually brought about this great miracle of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Only Moshe could it, because Moshe was singular. Because Moshe had the element of Zgulo. Why? Because in order to liberate the people from Mitzrayim, one appointment was indispensable. Namely, what appointment? To speak on behalf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to be his shliach, his messenger. L'chovesh l'chachrel parei. To be the messenger of God, only Moshe could achieve that distinction. Neither Aaron nor Miriam. Number one. Number two, why were the Jews taken out of Mitzrayim? Because nothing were better. As a matter of fact, Chazal say, Alol Eiv David Yizorav, Alol Eiv Yizorav, Alol Megad Medleres, Alol Megad Medleres. Because the Jew was different in the Mitzrayim. He sinned, but he was different. The Zgula element is responsible in the people, is responsible for the fulfillment of the promise that God made Abraham when the covenant Ben Absorim was reached. And the Zgula element in Moses made it possible for an individual to represent the Almighty and to act as his plenipotentiary, as his representative, as his shliach, as his messenger, in order to redeem the people. Zecheir asher otsa Hashem lekecho Miriam. She did not recognize it. She didn't see it. But it was baderech. You were marching, moving toward the promised land. Betzeischem Mitzrayim. Why were you liberated from Mitzrayim? Why were you taken out of the land of Mitzrayim? Because you have a zgula potential. Because the leader who accomplished it, who represented HaKadosh Baruch Hu, possesses this zgula potential. Not the potential, this zgula quality. So you are going, and Miriam denied it. Remember not to deny that. That's why there's a separate animaim as far as Nevuah Smesha is concerned. As a matter of fact, this Gula element in Moshe plays an important role halachically. Namely, yes, what, ah? What? What did you say? I simply did not hear. None. Yes, correct, yeah, the possible. As a novi rashoi lachadish dobo. A novi, it's very strange. A novi, no other novi, can announce new laws. No other novi can interpret the Torah. I have a right to interpret. You have a right to interpret the Torah. But the novi should say, I interpret the Torah mipi adibur. I was inspired to interpret the Torah. And I do interpret the Torah in the capacity of a novi. So the Ram says, the novi shekel. Even his interpretation is in accordance with the interpretation of the Chachamim. And the Novi Hashekel V'Yechonik. Only Moshe could formulate the law on behalf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Only Moshe could legislate on behalf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No other Novi can do it. And I always give you I introduce a very strange example. It is a suffering example. Then there is a pasuk in Zecharia that some people in the diaspora sent a letter. What is it? What's wrong? Okay, no. There's a strange parsha in Zecharia. The parsha tells us about an inquiry which came to the Kenim in Yerushalayim from some people in the diaspora. What should they do? How should they observe the Tainiyas, like Shuvos Betamuz or Tisha B'Av, after the reconstruction of the Second Temple at the Beis Hamikdash? Should they continue to observe Shavuos Betamuz and Tisha B'Av and all the Tzeinis, or they should discontinue? And this inquiry was addressed by the Novi to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the Almighty. And the Almighty answered, Tzeim HaChamishi, Tzeim HaShvi, Tzeim HaRvi'i, Tzeim HaChamishi, Tzeim HaShvi, Tzeim HaAsiri, Tzeim HaSimcha Yiyu. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave instructions to Zecharia as a prophet pertaining to what? Concerning what? What kind of a mitzvah, the Reis or a mitzvah, the Rabbanan? Sakodish Bohu discusses with the Novi and gives him specific instructions how they should observe a mitzvah de Rabbonah. Isn't enough, I mean, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu approves of the mitzvah and he responds to an inquiry by the Novi, a very practical inquiry, whether during the Bayi Sheni the Tanishim should be observed or simply abandoned. So why shouldn't the Tanis HaTzibur be raised to mitzvah min HaTere? You have the sanction of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is approval. He guides the people out of there. And meet with the Rabbanan. The 10 years, of course, the Rabbanan is not safe. The answer is, what is the answer? Because it was not promotion. Whatever was not decreed through Moshe will remain with the Rabbanan with Abraham. Even though later HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, the Almighty himself, told the people, guided the people, how to practice and how to fulfill a mitzvah Rabbanan. This is the uniqueness of, this demonstrates the uniqueness of Moshe. He was the Nesvin HaTero from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe. Now let us just pick up the scene of the Meraglim. The whole episode of the Meraglim is puzzling, the way we read it. We read it next Shabbos. All the commentators dealt already with this problem. I mean, there are many problems, many questions arise concerning the Meraglim. First, why was it necessary to send the scouts at all? What actually were they supposed to do, I mean, to report? What kind of report expected Moses from them? The report they brought did not satisfy Moshe. The prima facie not right. They said prima facie the truth. Why were they punished? Severely punished. What happened? We understand the horrible head of the eagle, but the head of the scout of the Meraglim requires explanation. At first glance, it's an enigma. It appears to be an enigma. Puzzle. I want to tell you many spoke about it. Many. All my four shatera spoke about it. Now let me offer my shot. There's no illusions, it's plain. But I believe that if you read the psukim properly in their context, and you read not only the psukim but between the lines as well, you may guess what did the Chet HaMeraglim consist. Why did main problem is why did Moshe send them? Why was it necessary? As a matter of fact, in the parsha, the scouts are not called Meraglim. They're not called Meraglim. Nor was their mission, which they were charged with, described as rigul. Consistently, the Bible speaks of losso, esoret, atorim esoret, vayosuru esoret. The difference between rigel, or tur, losur or ragel is quite obvious. Ragel means spying, to find out the weak spots in the defense system of a potential enemy. The task of the spy is to collect military information, whatever is relevant logistically, strategically, and so forth and so on. The Bible describes what a meragil does. Where does the Bible describe? I said Bible. The Chumash describes. Yes, it's correct. The Bible describes an assignment of the meragil. Meragel Matten Liras Hashem Vas Oret Potsem. You are spies, you came to see the nakedness of the land. You came to find the indefensible spots, the most vulnerable loci. In the land of the enemy. Nothing of that sort was entrusted to the 12 scouts, to the 12 so-called explorers. The assignment spelled out by Moses did hardly deal with military information. Hardly. Only one, two words suggested. Abba Machni may be mitzorin. They were charged not with regular swords, but closer swords. What does closer mean? As they say, search or to explore. Yes, it's to spar. To explore. They were charged with exploring the land. It was not a military intelligence, but a study mission that he gave them. They should see the land. Who is the Mesoret? And Moshe asked from them, they should submit after the return, a couple of reports. One report, a demographic report. Uri Besoroma Yeshiva Leva, Hosokura Rofe, Amahatu Imra. And Rashi added, there are countries which real strong people, and there are countries which real weak people. There are those which produce a large population, and there are such which produce a small population. It's a plain demographic report, it's a population report. It has very little to do with military intelligence. And then the Moses said, ask also probably for an agricultural study. More at Ashroyeshiv, a table in raw. More at Ashmenoi, a rozo, a yeshba itinait. He inquired, as the Rav Nezra says, a table in raw means in terms of climate. Ashmenoi in rozo in terms of the soil, fertility of the soil. Is the soil fertile? Is the climate good? And so forth and so on. In a word, Moses asked the would-be explorers to study the land and to submit a report, the results of the study. And the study did not, it completely was almost unconcerned with military problems or intelligence data. So why did he send them? Why was it necessary? I mean, to say that Moshe was looking for intelligence data would be ridiculous. When they went out of Mitzrayim, they had no intelligence service. And still they went out of Mitzrayim. And Moshe knew very well that the entrance of the soil would be accompanied by miracles, by Kodesh Baruch's help and support, as the Exodus was. So why was it necessary, I mean, to send them to collect intelligence data? As a matter of fact, he didn't ask them to collect intelligence data. But he told them to study the land and the people on the land. I mean, the flora, I mean, the population. Why was it necessary? In my opinion, Moses acted in accordance with a certain halacha. A certain halachic principle. And please don't laugh and I'll say it. I'll explain it. The Gemara says, Osu lelo odom lekadish isho achi nireno. The law requires that a woman must not betroth, let alone wed a woman he does not know. No matter how highly recommended she was to him. Where is the halacha? We can find this halacha in Chumash. Wat laat toch nooit? Gaat het doen eens laten vragen meegaan? Wat gaat u laten vragen meegaan? Aan de contrary. Ja, ja, waar wij zo is gefijn. No, 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 no. No, no, no. No, no, no. But it's the blind person who put the stumbling block in his way, it's not someone else. In Posuk, in fact, the story about Eliezer and Rebecca confirmed before. But I want to tell you why. The Bible tells us, by Sapter Oeved Yitzchak Eskol Adzvorem Asher Oso, by Ve'er Yitzchak Oeher Lo Storo Yimei, by Yikach Esrifko. Even though Eliezer told what transpired on his trip to Choron, notwithstanding Eliezer's portrayal of Rebecca in the most glorious terms, such as wisdom, intelligence, hospitality, and kindness, Isaac did not take care of her wife immediately. This is what Rashi interprets. By Ve'ero Yitzchokeyela, he introduced her into the tent, rushed her in into the tent of Sarah. It was before Kedushin and before Nisuyin. Why did he bring her into the tent of Sarah? She had to pass a test. Namely, what kind of a test? If she is the worthy successor to Sarah, whether she will restore the glory and the pristine beauty of the heir, whether she can take the place of Sarah. Yitzchak did not rush. She was in no hurry to marry or to betroth her to wed her. By Ve'ero Yitzchak Oeyalo, and he brought her into the tent. He waited to see. Will the same cloud return? Will the east, the dough rise? Anyway, will the nail be relieved? What happens? Sure, he may. Rasha says, Hariki so. Everything came back. Everything. He saw in the cloud the light, the candle was relighted. Then, when he found out, he was convinced that sure he may, Vayikach Esrifko Leisho, Vayikach Esrifko, Vatile Leisho Vayorel. This is the halacha of Oslo Lodom. He heard from Eliezer. Eliezer was an expert. Eliezer was trustworthy. Eliezer was devoted and loyal to them. Yes, correct. But he didn't steal, he did not betroth or wed her until he himself became convinced that she is the equal of Sarah. Rashi says, Ve'yevo ve'nasis dugmas tzoro imi. And she turned, her image turned, into the image of Sarah. Kleimar v'arevi tzoro imi. She is like so. Now let me understand. This is all of it. Let me understand all of it. What's behind it? Eliezer is trustworthy. Abraham said about Eliezer, Amishel B'chol HaShalei. He was the manager of his household, and Abraham trusted Eliezer. Eliezer apparently was very loyal and very devoted to Abraham. Eliezer told him a promise, that I suffer, reverently, Yitzchak, as Koladvori, Masharosa. So he told him about Rebecca and her wisdom, her hospitality and kindness, about her mannerism and so forth. Of piety and the commitment, sense of commitment. Still he didn't believe. Not he didn't believe him. It was not enough. Yitzchok wanted to observe her. Achi, also Lodom Lekaishisha, Achi ran at ninjas to cast a glance at her. That means to know her. Well, why is it necessary? The answer is simple. Marriage is not just an ordinary transaction. It is not just a civil commitment or a utilitarian mundane partnership. It is an existential commitment a personalistic covenant. Two lonely people, because wrong, if there's no marriage, person is lonely, the TV is hard on the battery. Two lonely people, souls join. Two strangers decide to unite destinies, to share in the same fate, to be together, to suffer and to rejoice together, and to travel together and to pay the toll of the road jointly. In order to take on such an all-inclusive, all-encompassing commitment, one cannot trust anybody. One must know the woman is whom he is. He dedicates his life intimately and well. Vice versa. There is a Isha and the Isha most probably not to marry an Ish whom she doesn't know. I would think it's a reversible equation. Had marriage been just a civil institution, not an existential covenantal union, first-hand personal information and knowledge would be unnecessary. But marriage is more than a conventional, practical institution, civil institution. It is something, there is something metaphysical. It's again the oneness of two people. It's again the union of two souls. I mean, the mixing of destinies, or the union of destinies, the merger. And that's why you just don't rely on the laser, no matter how loyal you are. We are told in Baal Yisro, the parsha preceding Shlach, we read it last Shabbos, that the Jews, with Moses at their head, who were ready to invade Eretz Yisrael. We are told in Baal Yisro that Moses invited his father-in-law Yisro of the rocky hills and the sandy trails with a people who was returning to its origin, which it left centuries before. We don't know exactly how many years our ancestors spent in the trails. The entry meant that land and people are to be fused into one singular existence. The entry signifies destiny of a people united with the destiny of a land. People and land became one. That's what the entry of this royal man. People and land will share joy and grief, honor and shame, victory and defeat together. For how long? It's a funny marriage. Marriage, I mean, death starts the part, I mean, the husband and the wife. But here is the Rambam Paskin, Kitchol Eshaito, the Kitchol Osset Lovet. It was a marriage forever. Consequently, the people could not just enter the land without meeting first. The groom could not enter the land without meeting first, knowing the land intimately. They knew it was a Haaret Zova Scholov it was. Yes, correct, they knew about it. But they had to experience it. They had to get acquainted intimately with the land before the land and people became united. That's why Moshe, a short time before the entry, the planned entry into the promised land, sent explorers to study the land, not to gather intelligence data. It was completely unnecessary. To explore and to report back to the people. He sent the would-be groom to meet and to see the would-be bride. Haluze banegev, v'alise meshohor, u'lise meshohor es mayi. He didn't tell them what. Mayi! Because we are going to unite destinies. Forever. Well, I mean, if we read the Chumash, I mean, superficially, the question arises, why was it necessary for Moshe to give them instructions how to travel to Eretz Israel? That's completely irrelevant. They knew the road, they knew the highway, whatever there was, the trails. They would have found, they would have known the road leading to the promised land anyway. In my opinion, and I beg you to pay attention here, in my opinion, Moses revealed to the explorers the reason why he sent them and what their mission consists of. But in order to understand the Maluze Banegev, Valishem Esor, we have to turn the pages back to Vayeshev. In Vayeshev, in the story of Joseph being sent by Jacob to inquire about the welfare of his brothers in Shechem. So the pasuk says, "Vayema leilech norei eshleim achecho, eshleim atzein, vashuvein edovo, vayishalcheu meimek chevrein, vayove ishchemo. Go, I pray thee, see if peace be with the brethren." So he sent him out of the veil, or the depression, or the depth of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. Rashi, I mean, says something which prima facie appears to be puzzling. Meimech Hebron? Rashi, Vale Hebron Boar? Hebron is not in a valley. Hebron is on a plateau. Shenemar aluze banegev, or vayalu banegev ayovi at chevrin. Elo meitzo amuko shoreisa tzadik. Akobu bechevrin, mekayim ha-shenemar la-avrom avino ben apsorim, ki geir yir zarach oderet lelem. I'm quoting not a medrash pliya, but Rashi. I believe many of you know the Rashi. How do you interpret the Rashi? Rashi saw in the word Eimek Chevrin, it's a Midrash basically. Eimek Chevrin, great symbolism. Eimek is a veil, a valley, a depression. One who stands, who finds himself in the valley, over which tall mountains tower, shutting out daylight, or a very deep depression. Shutting out daylight or sunshine, can see very little. Very little. He lives in shadows. His field of vision is very limited. On the contrary, a person standing on the peak of a mountain is capable to encompass with his glance a very large area. His field of vision is enormous. Standing on the plateau, on the peak of the mountain, he can observe and see things which he could not see while he was in the valley. New horizons revealed to him. When you climb up a mountain, a tall mountain, you suddenly see new horizons, a new scenery, a new landscape, charming, attractive. Me. Vayishlochehu meimek chavrei. What does it mean? Rashi asks a question. Chavre was in a plateau. He's in a plateau. Uvai is called me. Vayishlochehu meimek chavrei. What does it mean? How did he send him from the depression of Chevron? Very simple. Jacob accompanied Joseph down the hill, down the mountain, into the depression, into the veil. He didn't just send Joseph, he accompanied him. A part of the road. Down the slope into the depression of Hebron. When he came into the valley or into the depression, then Jacob gave Joseph bade him farewell, and he sent him to his brothers to Shechem to inquire about their welfare. Why did Jacob accompany Joseph? I thought it was probably, I'm not an expert in the geography, in particular topography of Eretz Israel, but it's quite a distance. Why did he? This was, Ashgoche wanted it. Of course, Ashgoche was responsible. Why? Because there was great symbolism in Jacob's accompanying Joseph down the hill. Down the slope of the hill into the depression. Jacob was completely unaware what consequences this errand will produce. He was in a valley. He didn't see too far. Jacob had intuition, his outlook, his glance embraced an enormous area. Yes. But not this time, not on that day. Jacob had inspiration or his incisive intuition, he wouldn't have sent Joseph at all. He knew very well the sentiments, what sentiments the brothers, harbor vis-à-vis Joseph. He knew very well that Joseph he disliked. And to send Joseph to Shechem to inquire about the health and the welfare of his brothers was foolhardy. But Jacob was unaware of it. Jacob did not know two things. That we will not see Joseph for the next 22 years. This was the last time he saw Joseph. Second, the Golas Mitzrayim has begun the very moment Jacob kissed Joseph goodbye, gave him the last hug, and sent Jacob to Shechem. He sent them to Shechem. But actually Jacob was not sent to Shechem. Joseph was not sent to Shechem. Where was Joseph sent? To Mitzrayim. He was in the valley. Meimek Chevron. Had Jacob been on the peak of the mountain, as he was in previous, with regard to Privy, as he was, he usually was on the plateau, because his outlook was clear on it. As Chazal said, he had Ruach HaKodesh, inspiration. Had he been inspired that day, nothing would have happened. He would have never lost Joseph. But he descended with Joseph from the peak of the mountain into the valley, into the depression. And his view became obscured. And he sent Joseph. And with sending Joseph, he precipitated the Golas Mitzrayim. Joseph was the first exile who left Eretz Yisrael, and came into Mitzrayim. Jacob was the next. Jacob lost his vision, his incisive intuition. He overlooked realities and acted in ignorance of the results which this errand will produce. And now, Moses said, what Jacob has started is going to be consummated now. Moses said, told the 12 would-be explorers, go up in the south to the same place where the great covenant uniting people land in matrimony. Valisemesor take the place. Valisemesor, climb up the mount, the same mount from which Jacob descended into the valley of Hebron. He was chosen by Ashboche to be the first covenantal exile to live in the vale of Hebron, in the shadows cast by the hills surrounding the vale. He was elected to be the first to rescind the union of clan and land, because by sending Joseph, Jacob precipitated what kind of a process? Of separation of clan and land, or people and land. What happened for centuries? The land was completely deserted by the household of Jacob. The household of Jacob and its descendants, I mean, were in Mitzrayim. So Jacob, by sending Joseph to inquire, to see his brothers, has started the process of what? Of separation of clan and land. That's what Joseph said. And this is described in Bereishis as if Jacob descended from Joseph, from the plateau, from the peak of the hill, down into the depth, into the Mamakim of Hebron. Because Jewish history, I mean, that time, Jewish history, I mean, was the history of Jewish exile started at the very moment Joseph turned his back on Jacob. And now Moses said, however, Moses said, we are elected to be another, to carry out another assignment, a much more pleasant and joyful one. We are about to climb up the mount, to stop on the peak of the mount, and to cast a searching glance. We belong not to the waiting generations, generation after generation waited for the Gula, for the return of the people to the land. We belong not to the waiting generations, but we are a fulfilling generation. And in contradistinction to Jacob, we will embrace with one look the entire landscape, the grandeur of the land. You will realize immediately what our relationship. You understand our relationship to the land. We are not looking for a land only in a material, political sense, for a physical home. We are trying to restore an existential, exalted, marital union. The land has been wedded to us, and now destiny, the destiny of the land, merged. We feel the suffering of the land, and when it's occupied by strangers, the land shares in our plight, in distress, in exile. Valisem va'alize bo'o, go up. Proud, thankful, joyful, aware of the great era which will commence now with your ascension, the era of fulfillment. Because I've always spoke, after always, Rashi, Adoveis, Bekeil Shadoi, Ve'era Avram Yitzchok Yanke Bekeil Shadoi. So Rashi says, Iftachti Ve'lekiyamti. It was an era of promise, and an era of waiting, and an era of faith. I mean, Adoveis had the faith a superhuman faith in these words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Moses' era, Chazal called, era of fulfillment. This is Shem Havayah, fulfillment. That Moses said to the miraculous, go up the mount. Jacob came down the mount. You go up, climb up the mount, and you will see something which Jacob did not see. You will see that the people return to the land. Uvenishem esoret mahi. What did Moses expect them to report? What did Moses expect them to report? What did Moses expect them to report? What did Moses want the miraculous to do? What kind of report? That is, aluze banegev valishem esor uriishem esoret mahi. Later he gave them secondary instructions about fertility, about population, about climate, but what was the primary instruction? This is the primary instruction comes to expression in the first sentence. I'll lose the Negev, go up the Negev, because the Negev, the cradle of Jewish history, was in the Negev. The revelation to Abraham was in the Negev. The priest Ben Absorim most probably was in the Negev. I mean, the Negev pulled Abraham. This is the spot which pulled our ancestors. This is the spot where the great covenant was concluded between man, God, and land. And now reverse Jacob's movement, not from the peak of the mount into the depression, but from the valley unto the peak of the mount. And when you stand at the peak of the mount, you'll see something which you don't know. You'll see the land. What does it mean? What really is, hence, what does it mean? No. That it behooves us to unite our destiny with the land. It means that the land is worthy of waiting and of uniting with God. You'll see the land, that only there the people can realize the great potential. Because basically, Moshe, what is the most outstanding quality of Eretz Yisrael in Chazal? Was the most outstanding quality in Chazal in Eretz Yisrael. Ashchino shvuya be'Eretz Yisrael. Ein ashchino shvuya b'chutz la'aretz. There's no nevuya b'chutz la'aretz. Therefore, the task of the Jewish people is to be miyitin kol ha'amad Hashem miyitin. That everyone and everybody should be inspired by the Spirit of God. And this can happen only in Eretz Yisrael. When Jonah did not want to escape, flee, I mean, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he got on board of a ship which was moving toward Chutz La'aretz. And you'll see that the land is worthy of our sacrifices, of our waiting, and of our faith and hope. May be the quality of the land. It means you should recognize the element of Zgula in Eretz Yisrael, the uniqueness of Eretz Yisrael, and the singularity, and the uniqueness and singularity of Eretz Yisrael somehow can be united with the element of Zgula, uniqueness and singularity of the people. You send them. Because also Lord Omnikadish Yishua Chirana. He wanted them to see that the land is worthy of the people. What did they do? Vayalu Banegev, Vayove Hachemer. 11 explorers did not care even to enter Hebron, where Chazal interprets. They certainly did not go up the mountain, don't say Vayalu Bahor, from which Jacob descended into the veil. He did not get a comprehensive view of the land. There was no revelation of the exalted grandeur and beauty of the glory of the land. They just explored it piecemeal, in a piecemeal fashion, in a dignified manner. Mimidbar Sin ad Levei Hamoz. They did not understand the Zgulor Chavisma of the land and of the people. The land was replaceable, and so if the land is displaceable, dispensable, so is the people. It was just a land. They never reported back to Moses concerning the mission of Rishon Haaretz Mai. What is unique about the land? Does it fit or doesn't it fit? Is it worthy of being united with the earth, or the land is unworthy of an eternal union? This they left out. Only colored when Yeshua said, they were its name. Good. He's worthy. It behooves us to wear the land. Or to be united in an insoluble union. We have no other land. Our destiny is linked up with the destiny of the land. That's exactly what the Medrash Tanchuma quoted by Rashi Men when he said that the Meraglim should have taken a lesson from her. Not a lesson of Lashon Hara, in not engaging in slander or Lashon Hara. What did Miriam overlook? This good element in Moshe. What did they overlook? This good element in the law. And that's why they were so severely punished. Miriam ignored the choiceness of her brother Moses. His numinous character, charisma. She compared him with herself and Aaron, even though she admitted his superiority. The spies likewise could not grasp the secret of Eretz Golot in its unique metaphysical relationship to the people. There was a common denominator in both episodes. In her protest against Moses, and in their report submitted to Moses. Namely, the element of his Golot was absent from both. And if one does not believe in Skulor, he cannot simply act in faith and cannot wait for the end. Then the element of Skulor applies actually in Yahadus to many situations, the element of Skulor. In our hierarchy of values, of course we have lower values and higher values, we have less exalted and more exalted values, we have less precious and more precious values. Like in any hierarchy of values, there's always a problem of conflict, a problem of priority of values, and a problem of choice of choosing values. But in our hierarchy of values, we have also school of values. You cannot say they are superior or inferior. They are different. Namely, could you mention to me certain halachic institutions which have the element of school of Shabbos? Shabbos is not just all year, then all Yom Tovim. Fendasyomi means a kavasa. What does Fendasyomi mean? Anyway, you don't know. It means gula, unique, singular. Shabbat is not. Yom Tov is not singular. Yom Tov in the Kaddish is all Razmanim, all Yom Tov come under Razmanim. There is no individuality. There is sanctity, the Bishop Sayyid. There is no uniqueness, no singularity. Shabbos is Chemdas Yom Yom Eish Bekovos. Shabbos is Kula. There are certain, there are the whole Zgula. But actually, the element of Zgula we find there. Because if Zgula is something great, something precious, fundamental in Yehadus, Moses, the head element of Zgula, the Moshiach, Messiah, will have the element of Zgula, Malchus Ludovic, the element of Zgula, and Yisrael has the element of Zgula, Shabbat, Shabbos has the element of Zgula, but its Zgula is to be found in Be'er Elam. The Be'er Elam, and the Rambam has repeated it many times, the Almighty is not only one, that is the only one. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, is not only one, God is one, certainly it is, but it's more than that. God is the only one, the single one. Maimonides emphasizes and re-emphasizes the great mystery of faith. On the one hand, God is the origin of everything. Wherever one finds being, he finds the Almighty. Eye, Asher Eye. It means wherever there is existence, is the Almighty present. If one exists, if I exist, you exist, it's because we do exist in the Almighty. Without the Almighty, there's no existence, there's no being. This is the mystery of Eye, Asher Eye. The world is in him. He embraces the world. To exist means to be in the hug of eternity, if I may use that existentialist phrase, as it's a correct one. Whoever is hugged, embraced by eternity, by the Almighty exists. There is unity between creation and creator. On the other hand, God is alone, different in the ultimate sense of the word, from the world, different from the world. Yeah, as a matter of fact, God not only created the world, not only God sustains the world, he also negates the world. He negates all beings. He is exclusive. He is a yochi. If there is being, it is only the true being of the Almighty. No one can imitate HaKadosh Baruch or say that he shares in divine being. His divine being is exclusive. No one is like him. Consequently, our existence is just a dream, just a hoax. We basically do not exist. It's a halenio. When you read the Pirate and Nikita, you see, it's an illusion. It's a very enchanting illusion. I mean, and a very dangerous illusion. But it is an illusion. Because there is only one who exists, this HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you have already in the approach of the Yahadus to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with both elements. One element, HaKadosh Baruch Hu supports the world. He is close to the world, he is near the world. And all the world has to do is to learn from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how to act, how to exist, how to live. On the other hand, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Yochid. He only exists. No one else. Usually, we come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When the finite being comes close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it is we reach. I mean, he actually stuck. He he discontinues two tenses, which is when finitude is added up to infinity. This is what you have in mathematics. You have infinity, finitude. So the Kodesh Baruch Hu is Echad, and there is communication between him and the world, but the Kodesh Baruch Hu is also Yochid Beimon. There is no communication because there is no world. So Zera Tekun Zera says, from Kulei command the lesson. The whole world as if the world did not exist. From the standpoint, from the viewpoint, Kavi Yoko HaKodesh Baruch Hu. Since man was created in the image of HaKodesh Baruch Hu, the terrible king Boreis, so man also is a dialectical existence. He is a part of the universal order as well as a single skula individual. We may compare man with other creatures, with the brute in the field, and with the tree in the forest, but at the same time, man remains an outsider, a stranger, who has nothing in common with nature. He is a part of the universal order. He is also sometimes confronted with the universal order. Moreover, within society, the relationship between man and man plays a dual role. He is told, on the one hand, he is told, by the Torah he is told, to open up, to practice chesed. What does chesed mean? To open up. To tear down the barriers surrounding the ego-centric individual. To let others enter his private lodging. And share everything with him. Man is told to practice chesed. And what is chesed? If not in open existence. Ram yuvom yeshis pesach leil. Kechem ayin. On the other hand, man is also urged by the Torah to guard his uniqueness. His singular endowment, his being alone, unattached, unmatchable and unparalleled, completely submerged in the I existence awareness. Man lives according to the others, or is supposed to live, in two reshuyas. Shabbos, we have three reshuyas. The reshus HaRabim and the reshus HaYochid. If a man continues to live in reshus HaYochid, he becomes an egotist. If he continues to live in reshus HaRabim, he loses his kula element and becomes an imitator. He loses his originality, his inspiration. Moses was the great leader who on one hand was one of the crowd. He suffered for the many. Leadership in Yahadush is always measured by the capacity of the individual to suffer for the masses, for the crowd. If you take the suffering of the crowd and you add up. You add up, one to one. The leader takes over the sum total of this suffering. The capacity to suffer for millions. This is the first prerequisite for the leader. Not to be glorified by millions. This is the Gentile ideal, the pagan ideal. This is the pagan hero. The Jewish hero is the individual suffering for millions, these millions. He suffered for the many. When there was the problem of the ego, what did Moses also HaKadosh Baruch Hu suggested? Nechenen on Nisiflacha. Just erase my name from your book.
Sacre. He sacrificed his life, his very existence for his people. He lived an open life, all encompassing, all loving. He did not display his gula when he dealt with simple people. He couldn't. This Moses was never lonely. He couldn't be lonely. He was the people. Vayim emochos, vayeshev meshe lishpet esom, vayamid om al meshe min adeke adlehev, surrounded by people in the midst of the crowd. And he personified all the dreams, all the hopes, and all the desires of the people. He suffered with them and rejoiced with them. However, there was a school element to Moses. It's very important. He was lonely. Lived for himself. And at times he could not communicate with the people, his others. Since he led his gula existence, which is not communicated. The singular existence, inimitable, unmerged, particularly incomprehensible to others. How can there be communication between the people and Moses if Moses is unique, single, no one is like him? Hence, Moses was the loneliest person on earth. Umeshe yikach esoeil v'notris v'nechutz l'machane. Is it the same Meshe who vayeshev Meshe lishpet esom? Vayamid om al meshem in abeker ad erev, or two meshes, same Moshe. Meshe was Rashus HaYochid, Meshe was Rashus HaRabin as well. And he was a Rashus HaRabin, he merged with the people. And he was a Rashus HaYochid, he was alone. Just communicated with what? The Bere was great, this is great. This mode of existence, which is rooted in the idea of Malachta Bedrocho, finds its complete harmony in Nakodesh Boru, but as far as human beings are concerned, we are dialectical beings. And wherever, if you'll just give me, wherever this Gula element is present, one cannot rationalize events. As an example, I can give you the situation in Eretz Yisrael. Basically, our attachment to this world and our faithfulness to the land, which is incomprehensible simply, if in logical terms. Unless we try to interpret it in metalogical terms, but I'll tell you frankly, know very little about metalogical categories. The logical category is this closeness of people to land after 1900 years of exile is maddening. Simply maddening. And don't forget that American Jews are doing now things out of a sense of devotion which may endanger their own security status in the land. Okay, American Jews are usually a rational Jew, very practical Jew. Very utilitarian minded and pragmatically oriented. And now when I look at the same Jews with their excitement about it, so with their readiness to attack anybody, be the President of the United States, if he says something which is not in spirit of Zionism, I begin to think, where's their logos? Where's their reason? Where's their practicality? He's a manufacturer, the other one is a banker. I mean, after all, by my business, the turnover in his business accounts in which is tens of millions of dollars. He has a clear mind. Many of them I know personally, clear mind. Why becomes his mind beclouded when Eretz Yisrael is placed on the agenda? Why do you want to go in to see Eretz Yisrael with the eyes of a Jew? Because our relationship to Eretz Yisrael is that of Zgula. Wherever Zgula comes to the forefront, the foreground, ratio, resides. You cannot rationalize events which revolve about God. There is an element of the numinous, of the frighteningly strange, of the hidden and ineffable in the Sgula Charisma. When the problems begin, I mean, to pile up, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose us as an Am Sgula? It's a puzzle. Why was not Israel selected the land of the Am Sgula? And was in doubt with the Sgula quality. This remains an enigma. Why is Am Sgula supposed to live in exile? Hundreds of years is difficult, we fail to grasp. When values are comparable, when common denominators unite many values, the mind is capable to rationalize. However, as I stress, Sgula is beyond and above the capacity of the logos to comprehend. At certain times, the Sgula element is in background. Then history is simply understandable. At other times, it's very hard to distinguish. The Sgula element is in front. It's visible somehow. There is a revelation of this Sgula element. At the very moment the Sgula element reveals itself, Am Sgula, Eretz Sgula, I mean, Mesh Sgula, so the enigma rises and everything becomes mysterious. The Sgula element cannot be understood. It could be only lived and experienced through an act of faith. It cannot be conceived to the intellectual gesture. We must know how tzitzis sakonot psil kriyas yohoyo lochem l'tzitzis, where they put with the fringe of each corner a thread of blue, and it shall be unto you for a fringe that you may look upon if you remember. Kriyas and lovon plain semantically, as far as he was a man, white and blue, either sky blue or sea blue, symbolize in Hebrew semantics two ideas. Lavan means the known. When you say in Hebrew, you say plain and obvious, you say v'adova mechuvah. Vadova mechuvah. The white color in Hebrew semantics is symbolic of human understanding. The comprehensible, the clear and distinct, paraphrasing a sentence by Descartes, I would say, he said that the criterion of truth. How do I know that what I said is true? Perhaps it's false. The whole problem which the Greeks confronted, Descartes said, there is no objective criteria, but there is a subjective criteria. I doubt whether he was right. If a man is convinced, has an inner conviction that this is true, and the idea is clear and distinct in his mind, clear and distinct, clearness, clarity, and distinctiveness of the idea are the criteria of truth. Paraphrasing this saying by Descartes, I would say that white is the criterion of truth. Because white means whatever is clear and distinctive and understood and comprehensible in my mind. Blue, on the contrary, the way Chazal describe blue. Blue, on the contrary, is indicative, according to Chazal. Cheles dey meleyam, yam dey mele rotiya, rotiya dey mele kise akore. What does it mean? What does blue symbolize? Distance. Boundless distance. like the sky or the vast stretches of water far in the sea. The distance, the remote, whatever is outside of one's reach, the perennial enigma, the sgumo quality, is symbolized by our historical experience, the paradoxical unfolding of our destiny. All that is symbolized by gloom. A Jew, apparently, is expected to focus his glance on the white and attempt to understand. Citeria was always encouraged men to understand the world. Citeria did not want people to live in obscurity. Citeria did not want people simply not to explore, I mean, all the phenomena of nature. I mean, Citeria encouraged. Seven threads of the teachers are white. Man should use his ratio, should use his mind, and make discoveries. Be scientifically oriented and technologically minded, as long as it revolves about the white color. No. As long as the world is given to man, the world is given to man, man can explore the world. He is urged to explore the world, to do more tzikitzur. And he should use his mind. He uses his mind. This is the white color. Man should use his intellect. On the other hand, there is one thread is blue. We have one is blue in the teacher. Man meets with a mystery sometimes, with something luminous, something awesome, beyond the bounds of the rational and intelligible. We encounter unexpected, that's good quality. Everything becomes distant and strange. Remote as the sky, and actually distant from our minds. But we have been trained to accept all. If the experience is understandable, then our intellect interprets the experience. If the experience is not understandable, unintelligible, we interpret it through an act of faith. This means the heart is coming to the